Okay, Rabbi, today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Tav Hey. We are up to the Mishnah on daf Kuf Tav Dalet Amud Beit. So now we want to talk about some very specific halachas we've been sort of taking for granted up until now, because we were talking about the kulit of bones that are able to act as a yad and that are able to act as a shomer. And we just, and this is the way that the Gemara always does things, it introduces an idea before a Mishnah, and then it turns out that that idea is actually sort of fundamental in the Mishnah to come. And that's what happened over here. So we started with this concern that Rabbi Akiva had about Rabbi Yishmael's din. And he said that if something cannot be metame b'maga, then it cannot be metame b'masa. Now, there's extensions to that halacha, because it turns out that, for instance, the din of shomer that we have, which we said, well, if something is a shomer, even on the other side of the skin, so you touch the other side of the skin is a shomer, and therefore it will be metame you. And even a hair, that's mechalchel, as we said. But how about if there would be no way whatsoever for you to be metame b'maga? So remember that Rabbi Akiva raised yesterday the question against Rabbi Yishmael that if maga is not a possibility, then masa is also not a possibility. Now, it turns out that that idea is also fundamental to shomrim. If you cannot actually touch something physically, it doesn't help to have a shomer and use the shomer to touch it if it's impossible to touch it. You can only use a shomer where it's possible to touch it. So let's say you have a marrow bone, and you've got this marrow which has a din of tumas nevelos. Remember, the atzamot don't, but the bone can be a shomer, especially if it's a kulit. It's got a lot of marrow inside. And so if it's a kulit, you should be able, and we had cases like this before, you put one side of a long thigh bone into a mate, into a ola mate, and it only has a chatzisayit. Remember, we had that whole question bringing another bone, but the bottom line is, was that the bone was considered to be a transmission of the tumah, because obviously it's a shomer. If you break open the bone, the marrow is in trouble, even if it's all the way on the other side of the bone. And therefore, what our mission introduces, if you cannot, however, touch that marrow, why? Because the bone itself is sealed and it's untouched, then in that case, it cannot serve as a shomer either. And therefore, you would actually never be able to be mitame from that bone. Now, that is all very nice when it comes to an avela, because an avela, of course, cannot escape from a sealed container. But how about when it comes to tumas mace? That tumas mace actually can come out of a sealed container. And that brings us, Mr. Gavi, will you be able to use your magic pen today? Because we've got a lot of new things coming up. Okay, so we've got a concept called tuma ritzutza. And remember, what tuma ritzutza means is that whenever there's less than a tefach over tumas mace, it's bokeya, it actually breaks its way through, and ola. So it will continue to break its way through until it hits something that was more than a tefach above it. Okay, so that's a fundamental of importance here. Now, the question is, what we're going to talk about over here is human remains. And here we'll talk about a kulit hamet. This is of a human kulit. That's our first case. And that ought to be a very different case because of tumah ritzutza. If there's any marrow in the bone, so then it shouldn't matter whether it can escape or not, because it's tumas meis, and tumas meis is bokad v'olah. But somehow, the Mishnah compares this to kulit hamugdashim. Now, this would be, again, a kulit is always, by definition, a marrow bone, because it's an extremely long thigh bone, and it shouldn't be the same, but the halakha over there is that in either case, hanogea behen, if someone touches them, so remember that there is a gezeira derabbanan that nosar, say, is metami. And that was in order to make koanim or zohir from nosar and so on. So nosar would be metabi. If you have a bone that is nosar, so hanogeabem, and here it doesn't matter whether they have an opening to the bone or they don't. Bein situmim, bein nikuvim, he is considered to be tame. So whether there's a little hole in the actual bone, which would enable you to stick a pin into it and to be, therefore, would be mekabel tuma on the pin, or to put a hair of your body into it, come into contact with the actual moach, with the actual marrow, then that would be metame you. So in these cases, it really isn't important because the rabbanon would goes around the bone itself, that it's metame. So in the case of the kulita mugdashim, it's a different issue. So the two cases over here are very different. Obviously, the human kulit is metame midiraita, and that the bone itself is metame. So we don't need to come onto the question of the moach in that bone. We'll see where the moach becomes an important issue. Remember that a human bone is metame with a shear of kiseora. Okay, so this is another important Gavi rule. Etzem metame kiseora. So therefore, if you're talking about a kulit of a human, it's obviously going to be metame. It makes no difference whether it's open or closed, and that is a very important yamim. That is for sure. The difference between a bone that's only a shear of a kisaora, or where we have a kisayit min hamet that is on that bone, the difference is whether it's mitame ohel. So if we have a kisayit min hamet, it's also mitame ohel, which leads us to a fascinating reality, a medical reality, that we have to understand when we're dealing with a human bone. And that is that if there is marrow in the bone, then what happens is that even if there is no basar on the surface of the bone itself, nonetheless, there's a completely different issue over here. Why? Because bone can regenerate the tissue that was on the surface of the bone. Now, this is actually a machlokas in the Gemara later on, whether we consider a bone to be an aver. And why would it be an aver? Isn't an aver defined as basar gidin ve'atzamot? That is because of a halacha that we're going to see coming up, which is that the bone can actually be regenerating. And that's called moach. This is another Gavi rule. Moach bibifnim. If you have actual tissue of marrow inside of the bone, then it either can, it's a machlokas, we'll see in this circuit, it can or cannot, that's one of your little brackets, and bimala arucha mibachutz. So it's able to regenerate itself. Now that regeneration, medically speaking, is dependent on the surface of the bone, surprisingly, even though the moach itself is mibifnim, because there are two levels of particular type of cells that include stem cells that are able to regenerate. And one of them is called the periosteum. That is the layer on top of a bone, which if you look carefully at a fresh bone, you see that it has sort of a membrane on top of it, the periosteum. Now, that is an extremely powerful lining. It has a lot of blood vessels, and it is packed with stem cells, even on top. You have the matching inside of the bone, a matching membrane, not membrane, but cells that are inside of the actual marrow, which is called the endosteum. That's the inside level of similar cells. You need to have both of these because cells migrate from the marrow inside and they activate the cells on the outside. And because of that, those stem cells actually rebuild what was on the bone before. So this is a machlokas in the Gemara, whether we rely on that to consider the bone itself to actually be an aver. If, because it's, remember, the din is in all of these halakhas that the incipient end of a thing, like for something is for sure going to make a hole in treifas, is considered to already be a hole. Or a bone that is going to regenerate is already considered to be regenerated, in which case it would be metame in an ohel. Now, the Gemara makes it very clear later on that they are completely aware of the way that this works, because what the Gemara says is that if there is damage, actually, the periosteum, it will not regenerate. So it's going to make the nafkamina between a scratched periosteum, where over there everybody is motivated that the marrow will not regenerate, and where it isn't scratched. And that could make a nafkamina in terms of understanding the case in the Mishnah. So we've got these halachas so far, and let's go on and see how this is going to help us define and understand the Mishnah. So we've got two completely different cases at the beginning of the Mishnah, one of which is talking about a human bone. A human bone is metame. It does not need the marrow to be metame. An etzem, even small as a kisaora, which is one barley bean, is still going to be metame. Bein setumim, bein nekuvim, and the same thing would be about the kulit of a noser bone, because that was part of the gezeirah derabbanan. But over there, it's the bone that's tame. So what difference would it make whether it has an opening to the marrow that would enable you to touch it? The bone is not functioning as a shomer here. Now, how about the kulit of a nevela? Oh, now we have all different issues, because remember, the bone of a nevela is not metame. Only hanogea benivlata. So that's another thing. What we should do is we should keep a list of the issues that we've been dealing specifically in the past couple of sugyas. So remember that only touching nivlata, but not hanogea beetzem, or in any of the keratin, like a hoof or a horn or anything like that, right? So in this case, if the nevela has a kulit, then the only thing that's going to be metame of that kulit as an nevela is the marrow inside the kulit. The same thing is true of a sheretz, the tumas nevela of a sheretz, even though it's a different shear, because over there the shear is ke'adasha, and the nevela, the shear is a kezayit, but the principle is the same. If there's no way to touch it, then there is no way for it to even act as a shomer. So therefore, if it's a kulit nevela or a kulit asheretz, and somebody touches that, if they are completely sealed and they haven't been damaged, then even if you touch them, it will not be metame you. Why? Because the bone of a nevela of any type, whether it's a mammal nevela or whether it's a sheretz nevela, is not metame. But if, so therefore you will be tor if you touch it. But if they are nekuvim, if they have even a tiny opening, which would allow you to insert a hair into that, therefore you could be mitame, because the hair of your body that touches something that's tame is going to convey tumah. And therefore, nekuvim in any small amount, even a hair's breadth, they will be mitame through touching it. And at that point, they end up actually being able to be mishamish as a yad, or even to be meshames as a shomer. And you don't have to actually touch it in order to be metak. But how do we know? How do we know that even if you would carry the bone of the nevela or the bone of the nivlasheretz, and we know that a nevela is metami b'masa, right? And therefore, you ought to be able to become tame by carrying the bone, because in that way you're carrying the masa. Let's say you have a kezayit from an nevela inside your backpack. Well, you're not touching it, and nonetheless it's metame you b'masa. So you would think, well, carrying the bone of the nevela is certainly as good, which is carrying the marrow in a backpack. It's a bone backpack. So how do we know that even tumas masa of the nevela is not going to work if you cannot touch it? Now, this was the halacha that Rabbi Akiva had used to argue on Rabbi Yishmael yesterday, And it was there that we were talking about Bar Pada, Rabbi Akiva Taina, that since you cannot be metame yourself but without carrying the two chatzi zayas of nevela on the other side, you won't be able to be metame b'maga unless you hold nogea v'chozer v'nogea, which is another klal of gavi, whether nogea v'chozer v'nogea is metame b'maga or not. So if you don't hold the nogea v'chozer v'nogea, so then Rabbi Akiva Tainan and Rabbi Yishmael, how could you say that you're tummy? If you carry it when the skin contains two separate places of which there's a chatzi zayit, and you said it will actually be metame you b'masa, you cannot be metame yourself b'maga. It was Bar Pada who said, well, you actually could be metame b'maga if you put your hand simultaneously on the two buttons at the same time, and then that releases the nuclear tuma, in which case you would be able to be mitame. So that was the sugya that we had started with yesterday. How do we know, says the Gemara, that if you were unable to even theoretically come into contact with the tuma through maga, that you also will not be able to be mitame, despite the fact that you're carrying it all together? I know that from the fact, as we saw before, that the Torah puts together the dinim of hanogea benivlata v'hanoseyet nivlata. And therefore, the same way that balechlal maga, balechlal masa, lo balechlal maga, lo balechlal masa. And that is the Gavi rule in the next piece to write down. And that means that if you can't touch it, then you can't carry it, meaning that you can carry it, but it will not be metame you, obviously. Okay, so let's take a look at the pieces of this Mishnah and make the necessary diyukim of what we saw in the Mishnah, because there's one very powerful implication. What it said in the first words of the Mishnah is kulit, and there was talking about a kulit of a mate, a human, kulit, and it says hanogea. If you touch it, you will be tummy, which is a beferish of pasuk in the Torah. If you touch it, it says, as we said, even a shear, a tiny shear of etzem kisaora. So that is absolutely kol asher yiga be'etzem adam yitma shivat yamim. There's nothing to discuss about that. So why did the Mishnah limit the case to nogea? Why didn't the Mishnah say that if you were ma'ahil over that bone, that you can also become tameh? Now, let me just point out to you that there are three different ways in which ohel will work. One is that your hand interrupts the shtuma that is going straight up. Remember, we talked about that tuma is bokat ve'ola. So tuma is always bokat ve'ola. So if there's something on top of it within one tefach, it'll shoot straight through it, just like a neutrino. And if it's a tefach above it, however, then it runs into trouble, because then we also have the halacha, a special din of ohel. An ohel has to be a tefach, but once it is a tefach, it contains the tuma. And what it does is it breaks the ability of the tuma to go through it, and instead the tuma flows throughout the entire area. And anything that is under that same roof is going to become tummy. So that is the classic case of an ohel hamet. However, there are two other ways in which ohel would actually work. One is you put your hand directly over the mate that is generating tuma directly upwards. You create, therefore, with your hand an ohel over the mate, and then your hand becomes tame as if it touched the mate. The other way is for the, when we say a mate, obviously it could mean anything that's metame but ohel. So, kizayit baser min hamate. The other way is for the mate to be over you. And if it's over you, it is ma'ahil on you, and that will also be metame anything directly under it. So again, three ways. You can be ma'ahil directly on a mate. The mate can be ma'ahil directly over you. Or you can be under and or inside the same ohel mate, which in which case it's the fact that there's a board or a ceiling over you that is Mevi Esatuma from the maid to you, and the entire room is considered to be filled with tuma. Now, it's a much bigger chiddush to tell me that there's a tumas ohel than to tell me that there's a tumas maga, because the shiurim are different. And over here, if the Mishnah would have held that the kuli tamet is batami in an ohel, why didn't it say so? Why did it say only if you are nogea directly in the bone, then you're tami? But if you're ma'ahil, and that means you make yourself an ohel, that is to say, you put your hand into the flow of tuba that is going up from the marrow in the bone, it will actually not be mekabel tuma. So why? Why did the Mishnah say you will not be mekabel tuma if you put your hand over that bone? Let's try to figure out what the case is. Hey, chidomi, e de'ika kizayit basar. Is there actual flesh of the mate that is on the outside of that bone somewhere? So then it should be metame in an ohel, no matter what part of it was inside, because as we said before, the bone will act as a yad, and we even had the case that we brought earlier from the Mishnah, which we spoke about in Ohelot, where it will actually be, it could maybe, according to some shittas, it would even be mitzari for chatzizayit on one bone and a chatzizayit on the other bone, which we spoke about before. So why in the world would it not be metame ba'ohel? So we have to say, therefore, that there's not a kizayit basa. Okay, so there's nothing on the outside surface of the bone. But what's going on the inside of the bone? Because you mentioned the kulit. And remember, as we saw earlier, a kulit is usually spoken about specifically because it contains a lot of marrow. So ide ika kizayit moach bebifnim, if you're telling me that the bone is normal marrow bone, and it hasn't been lying around for a while, in which case the marrow has simply died and dried out. So then the din is that if the bone itself would be covered by your hand, so then tuma bokaat ve'ola, the tuma that is inside in that marrow will go straight through the bone, as we said, because tuma is completely impervious to something that is going to try to protect you, unless it's protecting you by creating a chatzitza. But if it tries to protect you without the chatzitza of an ohel, the tuma goes straight through. And if, therefore, it is inside of a bone, there's obviously not a chatzitza, so the tuma should break through the bone, bokad va'ola, and this is the next Gavi magic pen. Tuma ritzutza is boka'at ve'ola. Any tuma that is pressed into a small area will force its way out through whatever is covering that area and break out. And if that's the case, the tuma should break out of the bone and fill up the house if there's a roof over it, or hit your hand if your hand is over it. So it can't be talking about that you have live moach inside. It must be talking about the leka moach mibifnim. So then apparently this is an old, dried out bone, in which case we don't have to consider the moach inside. And then there's another issue. In the event, we said the leka, there is no kizayit of moach. So how about if it's a small kulit? It doesn't have a full kizayit. But now here's the next Gavi rule. As I said, it's going to be a busy day. If you hold that moach mibifnim can be ma'ale arucha mibachutz, so that marrow regenerates even the full scale, whatever was on top of it, it will regenerate through. We talked about this is called surface regeneration. Bone surface regeneration is definitely should work. And later on, the Gemara is going to make the distinction about whether, in fact, there was damage to the periosteum. That is going to be one of the ways of addressing this issue. But right now, we just talk about the direct machlokas. Do we rely on bone surface regeneration to turn the bone into an incipient full aver, even though it isn't currently an aver? It's just a bone, which is an amazing idea. So this is called Moach Bibifnim Ma'ale Arucha Mibachutz. Then why don't we see it as a full-scale current Aver Ma'alya? And if it is an Aver Min Hamet of any size is going to be Metame Ba'ohel. So why would the Mishnah say it's only Metame if you touch it? So we've got a problem. Omar Rav Yehuda Barei de Rabbi Chiya. Well, there's only one solution. We're going to have to conclude that the Mishnah is teaching us that Zot Omeret, Moach Mibifnim, Eino Ma'ale Arucha Mibachutz. We do not consider bone surface regeneration to be the equivalent of reliable regeneration of the full Aver Mibachutz, and because of that, we don't view it as an incipient Aver. Now, that means that you've come up with a very limited case in this Mishnah, because you've had to explain the Mishnah as a case where there is no kizayit of Moach, which is why it is not going to be metame by your putting your hand over it and being ma'ahil over it. But if that is the case and you don't have a kizayit, then why in the second case of the Mishnah, which is mugdashim, so you have a nosar bone, why then is it metame? If we're talking about in the first case of the kulit adam, that it doesn't have a kizayit, so then the cases afterwards also are talking about it doesn't have a kizayit. So how come over there it would be metame without a kizayit? If there's not a kizayit of notar, and remember, the notar has to be edible in order to become notar. So the bone itself, if it isn't, and we're going to get to this idea in a moment, tashmishe notar, another rule of Mr. Gavi. And that is anything that has served the purpose of this notar is considered to be mitameh, the same as the notar. But without that, how do you explain the fact that the bone will be mitameh without a kazai? That's my first question. And my next question is, if you're claiming that the Mishnah is talking about bones that don't have a kizayit, then how in the third and fourth cases, where we were talking about the kulit of a sheretz and the kulit of a nevela? So even if they do have a hole in them, the Mishnah says as long as there's a small hole, they will be metame. How would they be metame? A nevela is not metame pochus because I is. We don't have to necessarily say that all the cases in the Mishnah are the same, do we? The first case, which was talking about the human kulit, that was talking about where there was no kizayit, and that's why it's not metame ba'al. But afterwards, all the cases, all three cases afterwards, what are the three cases afterwards? After the kulit adam, we have the case of kulit mugdashim, kulit nevela, and kulit hasheretz, right? If all of those cases, because the intelligent reader understands on his own that obviously in those cases it would be silly to discuss a case where there was no kizayit, so the Mishnah switches the case to where there is a kizayit and discusses how it is that you could be mekabel ketuma from that bone. So that first case was reish of the adam was like a kizayit. The three later cases, seifa, the Ika Kizayit. So we're just talking about cases where the bone is capable of being metame. If you're an intelligent reader, you understand that there's a difference between a human bone and between which doesn't require that Kizayit and the cases of Nevela that does need a Kizayit. Okay, so then let me ask you something. What's the Chiddush? I mean, there's nothing new here. If you're telling me that we're supposed to use our well-known halachas to define the case, well, by the same token, it doesn't teach us anything. What's the point? Obviously, if there's no kizayis, it's not metame. Thank you very much. So why do you have to tell me it's not metame in the oil? I don't get it. So what's basically the chiddush over here? In that first case, that it doesn't have a kizayis. So everybody knows that a bone is metame. That's in the pusik. I mean, a bone is metame. The shear is etzem kisaoram, and it's one of the most known halachas that there is, because we know about the din of blowing your way with a leaf blower if you need to cross a field where there is a bone, and you need to blow away any etzem kisaoram. I mean, these are like halachas all over the place. So what's the chiddush? Well, the Mishnah actually is not creating a specific picture that is giving us one chiddush. Each piece of the Mishnah is addressing a different chiddush. So here, let's take them one by one. Mili mili kamashba. This Mishnah is talking about every case has a chiddush, but it's not the same chiddush. And that's why even relying on the things that you already know to define the case is still going to provide you with a lot of information in this Mishnah. So let's go through them one by one, and then we will see what the issue is. I see that Mr. Handy's not giving up on that hand. They don't call him Handy for nothing. So what is your problem today, Meisher
I'm having a difficult time getting my head around the idea of male arukami bechutz for a dead animal. How does wait. It's not going to regenerate.
Malarukamibakutz doesn't mean it's currently going to regenerate. You're talking about a dead human too. That won't regenerate either. It's talking about if it were a bone in place, then it would regenerate. And therefore, what you're looking at is an incipient aver, and therefore it's metame. It doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. It's just a description of what is this bone. Is it a bone, or is it essentially an aver, which died? Okay, I understand. Slavery which died, that would be metame. So that, what's that first piece? So the Reisha is teaching us what it is that we were just been dying, and that is, do not rely on bone regeneration. Okay, so that's the way that we've understood the Mishnah so far. We'll see. It is definitely not the only way to go, but nonetheless, we have learned so far that moach mibifnim eino ma'aleh rucha mibachutz. And we needed to bite the bullet, and that's how Rav Yehuda Berei de Reb Chiya understood things. The Mishnah is telling us that chiddush. So that's the first chiddush, okay? And what is the rest of it? So the Reisha is coming to tell us that Noach mibifnim eino ma'ala arucha mibachutz. What's the chiddush of item number two? Item number two was the bone of Notar, and it tells us that it too will be metame, somebody who touches it. What's the chiddush over there? The chiddush is, and this is the next Gavi rule, shimush notar miltahi. Anything which is mishamesh the notar, that is considered to be highly significant. And if at one point this was something that the notar was supported by, and so too, this is a bone that actually supported that notar and acted as a way to hold it and to protect it. That itself is considered to be tameh with the tumah of the notar, not because it's a shomer and therefore doesn't require any hole, but because it's part of the original gezeira. And I'll prove it to you. The Omar Mori Baravua Omar Rabbi Yitzchak Atzmot Kachi Sheshimshu Notar. If at one point they were something that was with the notar and it held the notar, they are metamim et hayadayim directly. Why? Because in a sense, they were not said basis the davar asur. Obviously, this is a borrowed terminology from Shabbos, but we're saying it's the equivalent of being the base of something which is itself tameh, and the Rabbanan extended that to anything that was the base. Okay, so now we understand the chiddush of item one, Adam. And that chiddush is bone regeneration. We understand the chiddush of item number two, mukdashim, and that is the chiddush of shimushe notar, are considered to be metame like notar. These are big chiddushim. Let's move on to the chiddush number three. The third case was the case of nevela, the kulit nevela. What is that telling me? Oh, it's telling me this amazing halacha, that even though you have a kezias of nevela, you will not be able to be mekabel tumah from that no matter what you do. Even if you carry it around, it doesn't matter. Because since you cannot touch it, you cannot carry it. And the same thing is true about the shomer. Since you cannot touch it, the fact that the bone is a shomer cannot be stronger than the fact that it, the thing itself is not able to be metamayu, and therefore the shomer of the thing is also not able to be metamayu. Wow, that's an amazing chiddush, and therefore it is a big part of what our Mishnah is teaching, very important, which Gavi already wrote down, which is Shebalach Lal Maga, Balach Lal Masa. And of course, we need to extend that also at Shebalach Lal Maga, Yeshlo Shomer. Okay, Abaye says, I don't like this approach, because this approach of Rabbi Yehuda has to be based on the Chiddush of not relying on bone regeneration. And I don't believe that that's physically true. Of course there's bone regeneration, and why would we not consider it to be an aver that would be metame if you put your hand over it and you interrupt the flow of tuma? That's called ma'ahil, as opposed to just tumas oel. Now, there may be big differences between them, as we're going to see as we continue. This is very exciting stuff, my gosh. Absolutely super duper. Okay, so therefore, I say Abaye, I disagree. Moach mi bifnim is actually going to regenerate. And now you have to explain why it is that if you put your hand over the flow of those neutrinos, that it hasn't actually become tame. Because it's talking about that the periosteum was damaged because someone scraped the membrane of the bone. And if that is scraped, it can prevent the bone from regenerating. So in the case in the Mishnah is to tell me that it is possible to have a bone like a kulit, which will definitely regenerate, that will not be metame. So it's talking, therefore, so I have to think to myself, how is that possible? And therefore, the Mishnah teaches me to pay close attention to the status of the periosteum. Is it intact or is it scraped? And I have a marker for this, says Abaye, like Rabbi Elazar actually explained. The Omar Rabbi Elazar, if you scrape the membrane of a kulit sheshafala orka tmea, if you scraped off the periosteum in a straight line from one end to the other, it will still regenerate because you have an uninterrupted periosteum in the rest of the bone. But if you scrape it away around the bone, around the circumference of the bone, then it will no longer regenerate. The way to remember that is a tree. If you take the bark off of the tree in a line from the bottom of the tree to the top of the tree, along an area of a small part of its circumference, the tree will not die, and it will continue to live off of the bark that is untouched. But if you make even the slightest break in the bark in a circle around the tree, you killed that tree, and it will no longer be able to serve the upper part of the tree. So the simen is a palm tree. We could see this very easily because it's so visible. The simanach dikla. So it works the same way on the periosteum. A remarkable level of yediya, of medical yediya that the Gemara has about bone regeneration. It's really just incredible, the amount of chokmah that goes into these Hilchos Tumah and Hilchos Treifas. Wow. I mean, the truth is, even the fact that there are ramach evorim is an incredible insight, because the only way to understand ramach evorim, this was, I know many people knew Professor Sternberg from who was nifter last year in the Old City. He was like the world's leading mathematician for decades. But anyway, so he wrote a sefer on the ramach evorim and discovered that there are precisely 248 ossification centers, and has nothing to do with what you will see in a completely mature organism, but there are ramach evorim in terms of where the aver generates from. So anyway, I mean, to know this kind of stuff is obviously, these are Kabbalahs. So that is my approach, says, but I don't agree with Rabbi Yehuda's approach, and this is consistent with saying that everything is the same, but it's been damaged. That's why it is not going to be metamed ba'ohel, and that allows us to keep one case throughout the Mishnah. We don't have to start talking about one case is less than a gezayis, one case is a gezayis. This is a much cleaner way of understanding the Mishnah, I say. Okay, so this would be the second approach. Now, let's take a look at yet another approach. Here's a third approach. Rabbi Yochanan says, I agree with Abaye, and for sure, it has a kezayit, and not only that, moach mibifnim is ma'ale arucha mibachutz, and not only that, it's not talking about a damaged case at all. I got news for you. The point of the Mishnah is that the word nogea means ma'ahil, and that ohel is a category of touching. Because in the same way that tuma affects you by coming directly into contact with you, what's the difference if it comes in contact with you through the air? Basically, it's magic anyway. You don't see the neutrinos of tuma, right? There's no visible tuma neutrinos. That's a fourth flavor of neutrino. Nobody's even discovered that one yet. So if that's the case, if you touch it, it's no different than if you put your hand over it in the air. That's the point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is trying to explain to you that actually interrupting a flow of tuma neutrinos is no different than touching the actual thing, because you're never touching the tuma. You're always just interrupting a flow of neutrinos. And therefore, the Mishnah wants you to recognize that nogea is ma'ahil. They're the same thing. Now, this is very important because it makes an afkamina la'alacha. This is not theory. For instance, suppose you put one hand over a something which does not have a shiur to be metame, and it is not enough to be metame you, but you interrupt the neutrinos of that little bit of chatzi zayit. And then you put your other hand, you touch something that is a chatzi zayit. Well, the rule is two types of transmission do not mitzaref. Okay, this is going to be another Gavi rule coming up today. Two different transmissions cannot add up together. So you can't have a half a kezayis b'maga and a half a kezayis b'masa. That's not going to work. But what the Mishnah is telling you is that you can have a chatzizayis b'negia and a chatzizayis in ma'ahil, because there's no difference between them. Even when you're nogea, you're just interrupting the flow of the neutrinos. So what's the difference whether it's up in the air or whether you're actually touching it? That is a big chiddush, not only in theory, but it tells me, therefore, this very important nafkamina. So that is the chiddush. Nogea is ma'ahil. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. What you said, Rabbi Yochanan, about moach mibifnim, is ma'ala arucha mibachutz. So then, I don't understand. That's all very nice to talk about the case of the mate and so on, but and that it means ohel. But how do you explain the later cases? That means that the case of the nevela and the case of the sheretz, the kulit sheretz, kulit nevela, cases number 3 and 4 in our Mishnah, are tahar if they don't have a hole in them, and they are, you are telling me that it's mala arucha. If it is mala arucha, then it's a full aver. If it's a full aver, why do I need to come into contact with the moth? I'm touching an aver of an avela. And we know that an aver of an avela is metame. So the Mishnah stopped making sense the way Rabbi Yochanan is learning it. Omar Rabbi Ben Yomi Bar Gidol, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, the issue over here is more complex. We're talking about a dried bone in which you can actually, if you shake the bone, you can hear that the moach has dried, turned into a small marble-like piece of meat, and now you can actually hear it shaking around in the bone. Now, obviously, in a case like that, it will not regenerate. So why did I say that it's metame ba'ohel if you're ma'ahil? That's because in the case of the human, the mate, remember that Tuma Ritsutsa is Boka'at Ve'olav, which is the earlier thing that Gavi wrote down. So since it's within the closed space of a bone, it is going to break right through that bone, and it is going to be metame you from the outside if you put your hand over it. Not because of the bone, but because of the moach inside of the bone. And unless we're talking about Og Melech HaBashan, there's certainly not a tefach over that. And therefore, it is a tumah ritzutza, and it's going to go straight through. And therefore, in the case of the nevela, oh, there, kiva de mitzkashkeshu, since it's no longer capable of regenerating, so then nikva in, lo nikva lo. Only if you can actually come into contact with it, which was our earlier chiddush, if you can't come in contact with it, then it is no longer going to be mitami. Okay, so now it turns out that according to Rabbi Yochanan, when he understood the word in the Mishnah, nogea means you put your hand over the bone. And that is called nogea. Is there a mocker for that? Or is this Rabbi Yochanan's own insertion of this chiddush only because it appears here in the Mishnah, and this is the way that he interprets the Mishnah? Omer Avin v'Temer Rabbi Yosef Aravin, there's a Mishnah in Oalot that actually confirms what it was that Rabbi Yochanan said. Afana namitnina. So in the third parak of Eilos, the truth is that we've seen this Mishnah because it's one of the idyos. But the Iker Sugya obviously is from Eilos. What does it say there? And I'm sure you will remember this, as we've done it twice already. Hanogea b'chatzizay, v'hama'ahil al chatzizay. If you're touching with one hand a chatzizay of Besar Hamet, and with the other hand, you're interrupting the neutrino flow of another chatzizayit, or the chatzizayit is on top of you. In these cases, you will be tame. Now, how do you explain that? Because we have another rule. And here's Gavi ready to tell us this next rule. If you're going to tell me that nogea and ohel are exactly the same thing, so then, Mishomachi Mitztarif. So if you tell me that Ma'ahil is called Nogea, that would explain why you can combine a Chatzizayit of Tumas Maga with a Chatzizayit of Tumas Oel. Isn't this fun? Ela'i Amrit Tresh Mayunina. If you're going to tell me they're two different things, here comes the next Gavi rule. Mi Mitztarif, what about the Mishnah? Zeh HaKlal. Kol shehu mishem echad mitztaref is going to be mitztaref to a shira bimetame. But if it's two different modes of transmission, it's mishnei shemot, one is maga, one is matzah, it's not going to be able to combine the two shiurim. So obviously Rabbi Yochanan is correct. The Mishnah is saying you can be mitzaref being mahil together with being nogea. Unbelievable. Which teaches us that all negia of Tuma is essentially interrupting the flow of Tuma neutrinos. Okay. This was part of what Einstein was working on in his unified field theory and was never able to be aimed on those Tuma neutrinos because he skipped out of Seder, out of Cheder when he was a kid. It was bound to affect everything. Elamai. So says the Gemara, what then are you saying? Because it's not consistent. You're claiming that what? It's Chad Shemahu? Then how do you explain the Seif of that same Mishnah, which contradicts this whole idea? The end of the Mishnah says that if you were Nogea in a Chatzizayit and something else, a roof, is over you and another Chatzizayit, V'davar acher ma'ahil alav v'alka Chatzizayit, then you're Tahar. But why are you Tahar? Ichad Shemahu, if you consider Ohel and Maga to be equivalent, why wouldn't it be Mitzarif the Chatzizayit in the Ohel together with the Chatzizayit of the Maga that's outside of the Ohel? It should be Tameh, Hamai Tahor. So you see that Rabbi Yochanan is wrong. Now, wait a minute. What do you mean? What do you mean you see Rabbi Yochanan is wrong? I mean, then the Mishnah contradicts itself. I mean, come on. We're going to have to end up with an understanding of the Mishnah. No? No. Because, I'll tell you why. Kasheresha, it's not Kasheresha. I can explain the case of the Mishnah. Now, look, before we get into this next issue, and this is actually a very fascinating, it's an actual quantum phenomenon once we're talking about two neutrinos, but it's fascinating that this is the answer the Gemara offers over here is an equivalence. But before we get to that, let me just point out that there is a clear-cut distinction between the cases. Rabbi Yochanan had only said that if you interrupt the flow of Tuma neutrinos, it's the equivalent of Maga. He did not say that the Tuma of being inside of an Ohel, where you don't touch anything, it's just that there's a new Tuma called being within the same bayit. Now, that's not the same as interrupting neutrinos. And maybe that is all that Rabbi Yochanan meant. He only meant where ma'agil. He said, if you put your hand over it, or if it's over you, then you're being hit by those neutrinos, and then there would be no problem. So you could certainly, you'd think, answer that, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan meant. So Rashi says the reason the Gemara doesn't say that is because Tumas Ohel is actually the main Tumas Ohel is that case. Zot Torah Adam Ki Amut Bo Ohel Kol Haba El HaOhel. The din of Kol Haba El HaOhel is not interrupting a flow of neutrinos. It's being within the same roof space. The Kol Asher Ba Ohel Yitmashivat Yamim. So since that's the case of Ohel and Rabbi Yochanan wasn't mechalik between them, it makes sense that Rabbi Yochanan was not saying Davka if you interrupt the flow of neutrinos. However, later on, we're actually going to explain that that's precisely what Rabbi Yochanan did mean. He only meant ma'ahil. However, the Gemara right now is going according to the Shita of Rabbi Zeira, as we're about to see. Rabbi Zeira has a different explanation for the Mishnah, and Rabbi Zeira does not agree that there would actually be two different dinim, one for being in an ohel and one for interrupting a flow of ohel of tuma neutrinos. So therefore, Rabbi Zeira has to come up with an alternative explanation. What is Rabbi Zeira's alternative explanation? So Rabbi Zeira actually brings us a completely new idea, which is a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and it's called compression. Now, I'm sure you're aware of the Cassini effect in quantum mechanics. This is very much the same idea. If you put two areas close to each other, and the shear of the closeness is within one tefach of each other, and you've got an opening on the top, and you have tuma that is ritzutza between these, so let's say you have two cabinets. Cabinets are called migdolim. You have two aronot. You put these two aronot within one tefach of each other, and they're closer. There's not an opening of one tefach. There's a kezayit min amet that is between those two cabinets. That is called tuma ritzutza. And in that case, tuma ritzutza actually is considered to be a nogea in the tuma. If there's no poteach tefach, then what that causes is the tuma to burst out of the top as if it's an actual solid piece. And there it actually is going to be mitame. It's not a case. That means that the case we had before is where it was literally maga, because that, if you put your hand over it, it's not that you are touching neutrinos of tuma. The entire area between the cabinet becomes a source of primary tuma. And therefore, if you put your hand into that space, you're a nogea, literal nogea, and not a ma'ahil. In that case, that's what the Mishnah was talking about. But then we don't have any raya to Rabbi Yochanan at all from here, because Rabbi Yochanan claimed in a standard interruption of neutrinos, you would be considered to be able to put the two together. Now, we have to find some mucker for Rabbi Yochanan. So where is there a mucker for Rabbi Yochanan? That actual Tumas Ohel, that is a flow of neutrinos, is considered to be a Nogea. I'll show you. Mantana de Karlo Nogea. It's actually Rabbi Yossi. De Tanya, take a look at this right. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Melo Tarvad Rakav Hamit, Mitame Bemasa, Bemaga, Bemasa Uba Ohel. So remember what a Rakav Hamit is. Rakav Hamit is completely decomposed human tissue, which basically is sand. It is absolutely, there's nothing left that would indicate in any way that this was living material. So it's just dust. And that dust, Richie, this is actually what those incredible Finland ecological toilets do to human waste. They actually, you use a toilet that's not connected to any kind of system, and it simply decomposes any type of fecal matter, and all you do is at the end of the summer, you take out a small container of dust. And that's is an amazing thing, which obviously is a heck of a lot better way to dispose of waste than all of these insane sewer lines and all of the unbelievable pollution that they make. And it's all part of Richie's Island. Okay, so anyway.
Actually, Rabbi, I have to put an addendum to that, because my son, not me, because I believe in ecology, but my son, who is much more impatient and doesn't want to wait for things, is currently negotiating with Anders to put into the brown house, the small house, your house, he's going to put in a Cinderella.
Oh,
do you know what a Cinderella is?
Tell me all about it, Rich.
A Cinderella is a toilet which, after you sit on, it's a problem on Shabbat. After you sit on it, you push the button, and it incinerates the waste.
Okay.
It hurries the process and makes it all into. Now, how that fits in?
All right. Anyway, back to the ecological solution.
Cinderella.
I can see why that would be one of the things that Cinderella needed to work on. But anyway, that was only before, not after. So, I mean, once you give him the right kind of slipper, then everything will be fine, I hope. Anyway, so now, this human remains, which is nothing but sand, the question is, I understand that it can be metame bemasa, and I understand that it can be metame be'ohel, but how can you touch it? You can't touch all of it at one time. So how do you ever come into contact, bemaga, how do you ever come into contact with human tarvad rekav hamet? Doesn't make sense. So bishlama bemasa uba ohel, that I understand. Because look, if you're carrying it, you're carrying the entire shear, which is malot tarvad. And if it's over the ohel, so you're being mahil on the entire bit. But what does it mean when it says nogea? Halo noga bakule, you can't touch the entire tarvat of dust at the same moment, can you? Elalav shmami na. The only way to understand this brayta is when it says that a tarvat is metame bemaga, it means that you put your hand over it and you were mahil. But you said mahil separately. You said ohel, maga, masa. So how could maga be ohel? And that is the solution. There's two different tumas ohel. The interruption of tuma neutrinos is one type of tumas ohel. That's called ma'ahil, where you put your hand over the flow, or the flow is over you and will hit you from above. And then there's being in the same roof, under the same roof. That doesn't work through negia. That's a new din of being in the house. And therefore, ask the Gemara, but it says two different things. It says nogea and mayo separately. How could be nogea could be the same as mayo? Omar Abaye, that is the point. If you first, let's talk about Abaye's approach. Abaye's approach is that if the tefach, there's not a tefach to interrupt, then the all is for all intents and purposes negiah. But if it's lamala mitefach, then it just becomes a plain ohel. Now you can understand why that's true, because any ohel, any tefach within the tefach is essentially forcing the tumah to remain in that space, and it doesn't go through it. It goes right through it, and because of that, it's a tumah ritzutza. Once it's lamala mitefach, then the tumah spreads. So therefore, there's a difference. Rava says, nah, that's not the point. If you put your hand above it, I don't care if your hand is a mile above it. Neutrinos don't care how far above it is. And afilu lamala mitefach, if you put your hand on it, that's called negiah. And what's the difference between negiah and an ohel? This is called tum'a behamshacha, another Gavi term. Ohel, which is going to pull tumah from one location to another location, that's not called just plain ohel like ma'ahil. That is called tumah b'hamshacha. The roof will draw the tumah across the entire area. That does not work by interrupting neutrinos. That's a new halacha, and therefore, according to Abaye, the difference would be Reb Yossi is only talking about the difference between how high it is. But the way Rava learned, we just have a perfect solution for the problem of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan never said that Ohel is Maga. Rabbi Yochanan said, Ma'ahil is Maga. That's all he said. But being in the same room, that is not considered to be the equivalent of Maga. And that explains the whole difference in the Mishnah between the case, without going into Rabbi Zeira's differences of Tumah Ritzutza and Cassini effects or anything like that. All that we have over here is a simple difference of whether you are directly in the line of the neutrinos or not. And I'll prove it to you, says Rav. Aminah, how do I know that according to what Rabbi Yossi is saying over here, that it doesn't matter how high you are, your hand, if it's directly over the makor of the Tumah, is going to be the same as Maga? That's none. Take a look at this. It's actually bright. It sounds like a Mishnah, but it's a Braita. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chavilei mita v'srigei chalonot chotzitzin bein habayit la'aliyah. Now, this gives us another very important rule to understand. If something is actually built into a house, it loses its ability to be mekabel tumah. So let's imagine a situation in which you took a bed frame. Now remember that the way that they used to support mattresses was they would take a frame and then interlace ropes back and forth along the frame horizontally and vertically. So you ended up with a meshwork frame, and that's still used today with springs sometimes, you know, in those high-riser beds. So you've got a mesh of springs. It's basically the same idea of a mesh of ropes. And you attach them to the wall so that they form a barrier between an upper story attic and a lower story living space. And then you have a mate in the lower story, even though normally this thing, a bed frame, would be mekabel tumah. But once it's part of a house, it's not mekabel tumah. If it's not mekabel tumah, it forms a chatzitza in front of the tumah, and therefore it will prevent the tumah from going through. So the same thing would be true if you've got the window bars. Window bars are also a mesh, which otherwise would be mekabel tumah because it would be a kli matzot. But since it's connected to the building, it loses its ability. Anything that's mechuber to the aretz is not mekabel tumah. So therefore, if you use a bed frame or you use a mesh from a window frame, a window bars, and you put them srigei chalonot and the chavilei mita, both are chotzitzin bein habayit v'haliyah, and prevents tumah from going from the bottom floor to the upper floor. So therefore, if you're in the attic, if you put your hand even on one of the holes of the mesh that's made out of these things that are chotzeitz bifnei hatuma, you will not be mekabel tuma, because you are actually have a full chatzitza. And even though there's open spaces, that doesn't really matter as long as those open spaces are not the size of a tefach. Because remember, tuma can only go through an opening of a tefach. So besides the fact that tuma ritzutza is defined by having an area of a tefach, in here there's another din that a tuma cannot exit and go through something if it's less than the shear of a tefach al tefach. So now, if you're on the other side, you put your hands up against a hole between the upper story and the lower story, and that hole is not a tefach al ha-tefach, then it is actually not going to allow the tuma to go through, even if you put your hand against it. But if you took the same things, you took this bed frame, and you put it over a mate in the air, and it's not connected to the actual house, then it depends. If you put your hand at the space, it will become tamei. But if you put your hand over the area that was rope, I think I said it right originally. If you put it connected to the space, you will be tamei. If you put your hand only in the place you have a finger touching the area where the rope is, the rope will prevent the tuma from going through, which does not make any sense, as the Gemara will point out later, because the tuma, if it's within the tefach of the mate, would have to be bokeh va'ola, and in this case, you don't have a tefach to be a chatzitza. So why wouldn't the tuma go right through? It's going to turn out that actually Rabbi Yossi holds that Tuma Ritzutza is not Bokeh Va'ola. So the problem is we've run out of time. So I think we should do this piece. We'll finish up this piece tomorrow. We've done an incredible amount of new chidushim, and we'll review what those new chidushim are. I don't want to keep you even later. We'll go over the new chidushim tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, and add this new issue that Rabbi Yossi is being mechadesh over here. Okay, so far, we've got an interesting approach to Rabbi Yochanan. There's a difference between Ma'ahil and Hamshacha, which mean that there were two completely different types of Tumas Ohel. What an exciting day. Lovely.